DZ Sports Talk Show with Javon Adams, or should I say with Ed Smith and Javon Adams. My name is Javon Adams. You can call me Jay or Jay Love. I do a little bit of everything, try to stay busy over here, but the man of the hour, the man with the power, is the man who not only played professional baseball, but also played in the National Football League for that first Super Bowl-bound team for the Atlanta Falcons. Of course, I'm talking about my brother, who is a professional, who is an author and also a public speaker. He's going to be... I'm speaking it into existence. I'm saying it. I got faith that as soon as we get these little procedures done, you're gonna be back out there speaking to the world, man. Ed Smith, what is good, my brother?
Hey, happy Friday to you, man. A lot of stuff going on in the world of sports. I know everybody loves listening to us and hearing from us. So, yes, you know, we're getting it in, man.
Yes, sir. So we do this thing three times a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And if we want, we can share why we, you know, over the next couple of weeks, it might be slightly different version of the shows that we do that you're getting. And if Ed wants to share that, then we can. But if not, then, you know what I'm saying? It's a cloak of secrecy, and we'll be back to full power soon. But let's get into a few things. So NBA Finals, I believe I said on Wednesday, I said, yeah, I think Dallas is going to come in there. And they're going to win this game. They're going to win it, and they're going to make Dallas, they're going to make the Celtics nervous. I was wrong as hell. 107 to 89. The Celtics came out. It wasn't that close. I believe it was 63 to 44 at halftime, if I'm not mistaken. And it got close a little bit there in the third quarter. I think they got it the Mavericks got it to as low as 9 points. But it was even with Tatum having a 6-for-16 night from the field, Porzingis was the story. But I want your thoughts on it. I was looking at this and I said, this game is over in the first quarter. But what did you see when you were taking a look at the game?
Well, exactly what you just said. And I guess one of the most disappointing things for me was the long anticipated wait. I mean, the Celtics hadn't played in 10 days. Mavericks hadn't been out there in a week plus themselves. So, you know, to get us all frothing at the mouth because the series had gone away, finally gets back here. And that dud of an egg right there, Dallas came out. And Porzingis, man, you talking about a dude that – and when I heard, because, you know, I was like, yeah, played about at least 3.5 weeks. 38 days, bro. 38 days. And for him to come out there – and I think the mystery was how was he going to look?
Mm-hmm.
How was he going to – you know, his up and down the court. How are they going to – you know, like implement him in, that was the big mystery. And they even brought him off the bench to kind of get, you know, the old flow and then see how he mixed in.
Yeah.
And he came in, that dude looked like he was Superman.
Man.
And part of the problem for me, well, at least for Dallas, is they had no idea what to expect. So now they have the film on them. They'll make the adjustments. Now, you know, you're not going to expect Porzingis to do what he did.
Right.
You know, and then everybody else just kind of fell in behind him. So now the key is, okay, they'll make the adjustments to him, see if they can match up, see if they can figure that out. The problem is, does Dallas have enough firepower? I mean, golly, if Porzingis plays anything like that, this series is over already. And that, you know, for me, that was a big disappointment, the fact that we waited so long. I thought, and just like you, I thought this was the game that Porzingis come back in. He's a little sloppy along with the rest of the team. They've been off for 10 days, and Dallas steals this one, and then we got a series. Went on in the air. In reality, looks like, damn, if they play like this will be over in 4 or 5.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then that's really, I said that the other day when we're talking, that really makes it feel like that 10-day wait, you know, or however long the wait was, really wasn't worth it. So we'll see. I know the NBA is hoping that this was a mirage and the series is going to, you know, we'll see what happens with, you know, maybe Dallas will get back, make the adjustments, steal game two, or at least make game two look a little better.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can say, you know, once, because they, what was that I was saying? It's not a series until the home team loses. So
right.
If Dallas goes and gets theirs, then we got a series, but man, I said the way it looked from the, and like you said, Tatum didn't even play well.
Yeah.
Tatum looked like doo-doo, and there were times when they came down there, and I kept my eye on him because I was like, well, how's, you know, he's got to be feeling a little like third wheelish because he just looked out of sorts and he wasn't even needed. And there were a couple times where he came down and I was like, he's shooting that ball this time because they were going the other way. And then, like, as soon as the ball got back to him, I was like, he ain't giving that thing up, and he didn't. And he looked like the third person on that first date by two other people. So didn't even need him, bro. But we'll see how Dub moves forward. But yeah, that was a big disappointment. I was really thoroughly disappointed that game turned out like that.
I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Jaylen Brown had a decent game as well, with 22 mm-hmm. points. But the couple of things that were interesting, one was, I was looking at the screen. I stepped away from the screen from the TV for a moment. Then I came back in the first quarter and I said, they're bringing Porzingis in already. But in my mind, I'm thinking 7 minutes. Why are you bringing him in already? But no, that's around the time when you should have brought him in if you're trying to get him indoctrinated and get him into the flow of the game. And so it was about 7 minutes. He just, from the jump, I mean, he was doing things defensively. He had a dunk. There was one shot. It was, they mentioned on the broadcast how typically his threes are from about, on average, and it's weird that we have these metrics here, but these analytics here, but about 27 feet is what he averages when he shoots. But he shot one from about 29 feet, and it was just all net. And 21 minutes is what he ended up playing, but that's one of the things you got to be. That's a lot of adrenaline, I would imagine. Your first shot goes in, and you're feeling good, mm-hmm. and so then the adrenaline's going to carry you. Now it's a matter of what does that look like. Well, they don't play the next game until what, Sunday?
Yeah.
So there's some time for him to try to do some things on his own to get his cardio up and to try to be in better game shape. But you mentioned Dallas. What annoyed me is that, so you're down by 16, you're down by 19, you're down by 20. If you shoot a three, is the three going to cut the deficit? Is it a magic three that's all of a sudden going to be, it was 16. Now, because you shot that three-pointer, the lead has evaporated. Take the twos where you can get it. And there were quite mm-hmm. a few times where Dallas was coming down the court and they were shooting threes. If you look at Kyrie had a terrible game and he was 0-4 from the three-point line. And some of those threes, a couple of the threes that I saw him take were, yeah, I'm about to close this lead, this 20-point deficit down to zero with this three-pointer right here. It seemed that there was some, that maybe the nerves got the better of than you want it. Maybe they're pushing a little bit too much, or just in this case, the Celtics were just a better team in game one, but you have to do what got you there. And also there was some of the, Luka takes all those shots, weird shots anyway, like he'll force it. And he's had a great season this season, but sometimes you have to know when you need to move it around a little bit. Let's try to work this a little bit better to see what we can get, if we can get some better shots and chip away at the lead, to see if we can come back in this, get back in this game.
Yeah, I'd call it the panic. It's almost like they hit the panic button.
Good point.
You said, it was like if we hit this three, then it's like a video game. We'll get 5 points for that one or whatever it is. And there was no need for that. And they just showed that, like I said, they've been playing so well up to this point. And, you know, that when you get hit in the mouth, the reaction tells us a lot sometimes, and they didn't react well last night. Now, like I said, the key is the adjustments. And
true. They're going to adjust on Porzingis. They're going to adjust on him. Can Porzingis understand, instead of trying to force the issue, can he say, let me move this ball around, because they will key in on him, and this will give Jason Tatum a chance to be the hero, to be like Kobe, if you want to be like Kobe.
Absolutely. And, you know, the key for me is, one, you know, they've got to shut Porzingis down a little bit. And then, you know, the other guy, because Tatum, man, you talk about getting a hall pass in this one. Yeah. If this game was a tighter game, we're looking at that, his stat line, we're like, ooh, you know. Yeah. And so he's got to be feeling it a little bit himself. And, you know, here we go. Who was it? Brown was the MVP of the conference series. If, like, say if either Porzingis or Brown pulls off the MVP of the top finals, I mean, a lot of people are going to be looking at him like, well, what we give him all that money for? You know, he's supposed to be the star of this team, and he's going out there doing these 6-for-16s and stuff like that. And it'll be a long off season for him. And then I can't remember which one of them still needs to be paid, but
I think it's Tatum that needs to be paid. I thought I could be wrong, but yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Either way, yeah, the spotlight is going to be on him. there'll be a lot of question as to, you know, why are they giving him all that money when he's actually the Robin to maybe someone else's Batman, you know? So
to that point, let me ask you this, because you've alluded to it a couple times. If you could, because you were a high level athlete performing at a high level, do you think if in a 7-game series, let's say he has another shaky game two, but they win, is that in his head that he's thinking, gosh, I'm not doing any, do you think an athlete in that situation would start to put it on his shoulders a little bit more? The pressure starts to get a little bit heavier. Do you think that you have those conversations with yourself?
Not even conversations with yourself. It's the media that will bury that into your brain as well. Mm. Because every time we go into these press conferences now, it's almost like he's not just trying to convince us. He's also trying to convince himself with the answers. Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, well, you know, I'm just out here just trying to do, you know what? Nah, everybody knows, you know, you're supposedly the superstar. It all falls on your shoulders. And here's the thing, it all falls on your shoulders regardless, sometimes whether win or loss. It is how you played. If the others are carrying you, then mm-hmm. what the media and everybody else will point that out, you know, and then it's a little bit of shock to the ego, you know, yeah. Whereas if he's carrying the team and doing his job, then there's no question about it. But yeah, heaven forbid if you lose, because then it all the focus and spotlight is on you. He got away with one last night because they came out and didn't even need him for the most part. But yeah. You would have liked for him to come out and at least contribute to a, you know, a better than what he did. Well, like I said, they didn't need him. You got away with this one. Heaven forbid, like, you lose one, and all of a sudden they'll really be talking bad about him, especially up there in Boston. You know, so I guarantee you a little bit of pressure is on him in terms of, I got to come out and I got to play better. And, you know, the questions are a little more softballish when you win a game like this. But, you know, you mess up and lose game two and got to go back to Dallas. And I think, like you brought up the other day, it's a 2-3-2, I think. So you go back to Dallas down one, giving up home court advantage. That'll be a huge question mark for the Celtics and for Tatum moving forward. But like I said, I don't know. My question is it fair? Does everybody have to be a superstar, especially just because you give them the money?
Because it's two. Wait, hold on. I'm just looking right here. It's 2-2-1-1-1. So it's back to the old school.
Okay, so it's 2-2. Okay, all right. But does everybody have to be a superstar? Tatum, to me, he's a really good basketball player.
Yeah,
I get it.
I mean, you're really good. What you mean, just really good, man? You hate really on me? Good.
Yeah.
You hating on me, man?
I mean, is he, like, right now, when you think of the top 5 to 10 guys in the league, for me, I'm getting near the 10, and I'm bringing Tatum's name up, not 5 or 1. And it's, you know, the thing is, okay, is there a crime against that? Nah, he's a really good basketball player. But he's not, to me, it's almost like they're trying to force the square peg into the round hole because, you know, Celtics are the best team in the league. They have the best record. So one of them two has got to be the best player, one of the best players in the league, right? No, it doesn't. There's a really good kind of group of guys that play well together. It does. So. Yeah. You know, and then when he has these nights like this, for me, it just stamps it even more. He's not what I would call the face, like the one of the best players in the league. He's a really good, really, really, really good player. Right. I don't see greatness in Tatum.
And there's nothing wrong with being really, really good and getting paid like you're great.
No, especially when you got other really, really, really good players around you. You got three really, really, really good players playing really, really, really good. You don't have you don't have a great dude out there, but there's nothing wrong with that.
Indeed. So real quick, as we wrap this one up, what do you have for in game two? This is overreaction, right? I think the Mavericks are going to claw one out. I think they're going to come and Kyrie's going to have a better game. I think he'll be able to kind of monitor what's going on and be able to play that general a little bit better. I think that Dallas will eke it out. It'll be a close game, but I think they'll eke it out. What would my level of confidence be on that? Scale of 1 to 10? Probably a 6. But I would say Dallas is going to eke it out. What you got for game 2?
Man, it's such a long, you know, road to Sunday, a lot of time, and I do think they get some of the answers to this Rubik's Cube. I think they'll figure him out. I don't expect Porzingis to have that type of game again. And one thing about his shot, Jay, when he looks so strange because he's 7+.
Yeah.
And just like with Wembanyama, it's like, that dude's not supposed to shoot like that with being that tall. And his shot is not the prettiest and smoothest, but when you see it go in, it's like, ugh, damn.
that's all you get. It's the, ugh. That's what you say, man. What am I supposed to do with that, man?
So I don't expect it to be that, you know, again on Sunday. I'm with you. I think Dallas finds a way to adjust, and they get enough out of Kyrie and Luka, and they win that one in a squeaker.
Okay. Easy Sports Talk Show with Ed Smith and Javon Adams. Let's go to, so who is one of your favorite college basketball coaches? I know who you're going to say, but who's one of your favorite college
basketball coaches? Of all time, or?
Yeah, give me two or three. Roy, would you say? Coach Smith. Okay.
Hubert Davis.
You did not say Hubert Davis. I'm going to kick your eye. Okay. Now, yesterday, the news came out that the Lakers, who were reportedly on the verge of signing J.J. Redick to be their next head coach, and all the chatter around that. But it came out yesterday by Adrian Wojnarowski that said that they're looking at University of Connecticut coach Dan Hurley. And I don't know how I feel about that. But I do understand why he would consider it, and I think it could be something that works. I don't think, before I get into my thoughts on it, I'm just a slight aside. What I don't like, and these are the things, if somebody said to you when you were going to make that transition that pivot to become an NFL player, and they said to you, Ed, I don't think you should do it because there's so many people that go out and try to go to become a football player. So many fail. Why? So you're going to fail because everybody else failed. So you're going to fail. It doesn't mean that by you going through and giving it a try that you will be successful, but automatically assuming that you will fail is a fool's errand. And what I mean by that is the people that are, when they're giving their analysis on whether or not Hurley could transition to be an NBA coach, they're saying because so many other college coaches have tried, and therefore, because they failed, he will fail too. That's crazy. I think that's crazy. Your thoughts on that before, and your thoughts on what Hurley could do maybe if he is indeed the Lakers coach, becomes a Lakers coach.
We've seen a lot of coaches make that attempt, and it is a different game. And the reason it's a different game, Jay, is because you're dealing with different types of players. In college, up until recently, the head coach was the alpha, the omega, he was everything. Players came in and you played for that coach. You kept your mouth shut. You know, you did what you're supposed to do to keep that scholarship. Right. Now, and then when you got to the next level, like the dudes, it's almost like they graduated, they went and got their money. Now you can't tell them anything. You come in, you're making a whole lot less money than the players, and it's hard for you to walk in a room and garner that respect because, you know, they tell you what to do, and they get you fired, you know, that type of thing. So you have to change it. Like, college coaches were a different breed. Now, the college game is starting to replicate a little bit like the pro game where, you know, these players, they have a lot of power, a lot more power. So it's simulating a little more now these days. But the reason, like, a lot of college players failed at that level because of the difference. Now, man, I'm telling you, it would be really tough for me to stay behind and coach these kids that are now telling me what to do. So I think some of the college coaches are thinking, well, I either got to stay here and take it, or I can go get paid more money and deal with grown men in a different environment and maybe go after that goal that I always once had, and it's more alluring, you know. Gone are the days that a college coach is just a college coach. Yeah. And I would warn against it because – when you're in a position like Hurley is, and we can talk about this too, I mean, you talk about security and comfort. I mean, you got to go out and you still got, you got to deal with these kids, but you're going out and you're getting these long-term extensions. And the university, every time they even think you're interested in something else, they want to up you, extend you and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Whereas you go to the second you get to the pro game, Jay, especially with a team like the Lakers, the clock starts ticking from the moment you take the job. Right. And it's almost like there's a 3 or 4 year window.
If you're on the Lakers, it's a 2 year window.
2 year window. You know, the only good thing is with LeBron being closer to the end than he is the beginning, they know his window's clicking or ticking as well.
Yeah.
So no longer will they have to do things to appease him, draft his son. No longer will they have to, you know, go get the coach that he says, go get, stuff like that. But at the same time, man, it could be a miserable 2 years trying to coach LeBron and AD, because like I said, those dudes, they have it in their mind. They know what they want and what they're going to do. Yeah. How are you going to go in there and tell them, Coach LeBron? You know, you come in and you're asking him, hey, LeBron, do you like this? You know, how does this look to you? You know, that's how they have to coach at that level now. And you're talking about even all other teams as well. You're looking at some of these teams like a Cleveland Cleveland who got to the playoffs.
They got to the second round. Yeah.
And players going to get their coach fired. It's like, come on. It's like I said, it's definitely flip-flopped in that league these days. I would warn any head coach, before you give up your comfort and your security, they better offer you the world and then some. So, yeah. You know, because you've got to remember, you're uprooting your family, leaving all the security, you're going out to L.A., the big city, but it could be 4 years and you could be looking for a new gig, man.
Flip side of that. So I hear that. I hear 100% of what you're saying. But with the NIL, with the paying players, with the transfer portal, you don't play a kid enough. He's going to bounce out. And you thought you had a great team, and you thought that young man was on your side, and that he was going to stay for at least 3 years, and then he decides to go somewhere else because they're going to give him more money. It seems like there's much more. When you mentioned why Jay Wright or Krzyzewski, and there are other coaches that have left, that have retired or either gone to maybe become an assistant in the NBA, to look and say, yeah, it's just a lot. I'm not doing just coaching. I'm not, besides trying to be a mentor to young men, or if that's part of their mission, they have to do all these other things to try to make sure these players are satisfied or satiated. And I think that is something that may turn you off, because they love you today, but I guarantee that if UConn has 2 or 3 bad years, then they're going to kick him out just the same way an NBA team would. So maybe why not get paid that money, that guaranteed exorbitant, maybe go for a 5 or 6 year guaranteed contract. And if worse comes to worse, you can either go back to the college ranks or as I heard somebody say this morning, which might be, you become an assistant and you're still making a lot of money. You just don't have to deal with all the headaches that come with things outside of being a coach.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And like I said, especially when you think about what these college coaches are dealing with now in terms of and part of it too is the power struggle. The players, like I said, they are now realizing at that level they have a lot of power. If they don't like you, they just jump on a transfer portal and go here, and they expect their NIL, and you now have to listen to them. They have a voice. And
you gotta get that respect no matter what, because you talked about famously in the NFL when there was a rookie head coach that came in and he said, I don't care who you are, X, Y, Z, this, that, and the other, and he lost the room right then. So you gotta, if you're gonna be, Hurley is intense, so he could still take that intensity, but maybe you just have to. You have to channel it in different ways. It has to manifest. It has to come out in different ways. But they still got to understand your intents and that you know what you're doing. But yeah, if you come in that first practice, that first week of stuff, and people are already going to mentally check out from you. You know, I told you famously, I think I've mentioned it on the pod before, that I got into a management position and I thought I was coming in ready to give the greatest speech, and I gave my little introductory pep rally to the team I was going to be taking over, and one of the ladies who was much more experienced than I said, how are you going to help me? I had no words. I had no words. So it took me a while just to earn, just to get back to zero to start to earn that team's trust. You can, it takes a minute for it to go all the way, and it takes for a long time to be able to try to win it back.
It does. And I accept you mentioned that one story. I said, I got that dude, I won't name names, but he lost us all the second he come out there beating his chest like that. And the other thing, you have to coaching styles do matter, especially in the NBA, and the intensity that Hurley's going to bring, it might work in college for a 30-game schedule, but can you imagine 82-game schedule with the way these guys like to load manage and get through the 82, and I'm not feeling good today, and Hurley wants to go out there and practice on the road in between a couple games and stuff like that. And, man, you're talking about losing the group early. Yeah. He could. And, I mean, all that has to be taken into account. You're not dealing with little boys. You're not dealing with young men anymore. You're dealing with grown men making a whole lot of money for a long time. Yeah. You know, trying to talk them into your, you know, you can go in there and try to rah-rah them, but that's only going to go so far. A lot of that will be discovered. Now, this is for you, as a fan. This, you're hoping that these are the conversations that the front office and Hurley are honestly having today and over the weekend, and they make a great educated, guess together, because you just can't bring this dude in because he won in college. Well, he's going to win over here. Like I said, they can be really ugly and get really ugly if you match it up the wrong way. So me personally, if I'm a heck, I got to have extreme goals of, yes, definitely coaching in the NBA. And it can only be satisfied one way, by going and coaching one of the legacy teams, and otherwise I'm keeping my behind in college, bro.
Because it don't hit the same if you say it. I've always wanted to be the coach of the Orlando Magic. Thanks for having me on board.
Yeah, thank you.
But to that point, though, you mentioned something that we'll close with this, is what was it, Milwaukee? Griffith was the coach. He was having a good year. Again, I've never said that he was a great coach, but you would think that your rookie year as a head coach is not going to be as good as your third year as a head coach, because you should learn. You thought you knew what the job was going in, but now you understand it. So you're able to adjust, and you should, if you're not growing, if you're not becoming better, then let the organization be able to make that decision. But you in the middle of your first campaign, and they say, nah,
34-13, bro.
34-13. And then we know that the Superman came in and saved the day, and Doc Rivers. So,
snake in the grass.
Man. But yeah. And I know we keep, we'll get into a deeper conversation about it, but I just wanted your thoughts on this. Earlier this week, Major League Baseball suspended five players for betting on their sport. One of those was suspended for life because he not only bet on his team. There is a clear messaging that you always hear about, especially when it comes to Major League Baseball, that they say, do not bet on your game. Do not bet on this sport. Do not bet on this sport. And yet there are those that do it. One gentleman lost a year's worth of salary because he bet, I want to say, less than $500 on baseball. You famously have said, man, even though it's legal, we're in the state in which we live, and I say, Ed, let's go ahead and maybe bet $5. And you say, I don't know, Jay, because it has been so ingrained into you when you were playing baseball and you were playing in the National Football League that, nah, you can't do this. If you do, it is to your detriment. When these stories come out, what runs through your mind?
Part of it, being a former player, the hypocrisy is like, if there were scale of different things, the hypocrisy of all like of my the leagues.
Like my grandfather telling me, don't drink as he was sipping his Jack Daniels.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Okay. It's like, do as I say, not as I do. We got all these leagues and all these commissioners making billions of dollars by teaming up, by getting in bed with betting. Mm-hmm. You know, the it's so salacious. They get intertwined with them, and then it's like, well, you players, you cannot do this, man, and which I understand, because you want to maintain the integrity of your game, but you're the ones dangling the carrot, helping to dangle the carrot in front of these players that if you, you know, you get a group of them throughout every one of these leagues, you're going to have some scragglers, bro. And you have some dudes that break the law, break the, you know, break the lines and stuff like that. So, and
but
I guess,
is it that much to say, hey, you can bet on cricket if you want, Major League Baseball player, just don't bet on baseball. You can bet on, you can bet on soccer if you want, NFL player, just don't bet on the NFL. And you get where I'm going with that. Is that too difficult an ask?
If you are a football player, Jay, what do you know the most about?
Football.
If you're a baseball player, what do you know the most about?
Baseball.
Okay. If you're a soccer player, what do you know the most about? You might be an athlete, but you know the most about your sport. You know, you have some inside light to your sport. You don't know a whole lot about football. Nobody knows everything there is to know about betting, and even athletes don't know enough about, you know, the other sports, they're even their own sports, because obviously guys, they throw money around, they lose money. Mm-hmm. But they say I can do everything but baseball. So they start dibbling into football, dibbling into basketball, realizing I don't know nothing about this. And they keep losing, Well, you know what I know a little bit about? I know a little bit about the over-unders. I know a little bit about the pitchers that we're facing, because this dude gets lit up by us, or this dude handles us.
Okay.
And, you know, we know. So, hey, I want to just throw a little bit on this. So that's the temptation. And that's why it's so hypocritical of these leagues. Well, even if you do it, just don't do it on our sport. I fall back to the alcohol and the different things that they're, that obviously they haven't gotten in the weed yet, all these, but bro, it's around the corner. At some point, because it's legal in all these states, they're going to start talking about, it's legal now, so we can back it, because they're going to give us a whole lot of money. Now, I get there's conversations going on right now, and they're trying to talk the first league into taking the leap into, legalized marijuana and stuff like that. Nah, we can't do that. At some point, conversation's going to be like, you going to give us how much money to maybe we can do that. Well, we just don't want to be the first one to do it. Right. That type of thing. Same things happen with betting. And like I said, the hypocrisy of, we're going to make all these millions of dollars and then punish. And here's the thing. Every league is just hoping when we do find, because they're going to find you, players. Any players out there, I don't care if you're betting on your mama's name, your girlfriend's name, whoever it is.
Right.
Somehow, some way, it's going to come back to you. They're going to find you. They're going to bust you. And it's the leagues are all hoping, crossing their fingers, let's just not get one of our big guys.
Yeah.
Let's just make sure it's a dude that was hurt and not even playing last year, not even on an active roster this year. We can get him. Make a statement by banning him for life. He banned for life.
That's why the coach says, I'm gonna treat you all the same, and his star player gets in trouble, and he says, all right, man, it's just between me and you, man. Just make sure that make sure you're here by curfew. I need you for this game.
Yes, indeed. So every league is hoping that one of their mega stars doesn't get, we can have the middle guys, we can have the lower tier guys. Just don't let it be one of our mega guys, because it would destroy.
That has to be something that when they put their pillow on the head, when they put their head on the pillow at night, that they are just hoping that they do not get some type of notification that says, Commissioner, we need to talk to you. Something happened. It happened.
And like I said, but the biggest thing for me is, and like I said, I have some sympathy for the players. I was never, I never did it myself, but I can understand how difficult it is, especially. And then, like I said, when you look and see how much money these leagues are making and all the, and they bring it in, and they'll talk about how they educate the players. Educate the players is a 30-minute seminar on why you can't bet. And then they put the signs up. Every locker room and clubhouse has the signs that'll tell you what happens if you get caught betting.
Yeah.
And, after that first day when they come in and talk about it, that sign is left behind. And meanwhile, you got these guys, like I said, the temptation is just out there, bro. I mean, I feel sorry for some of the players who fall victim to it, and the league will never cop to anything other than, well, we told them not to do it. Okay.
That is Ed Smith. I am Javon Adams. We do this thing three times a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. We're taking a little break. I'm going to be on a cruise, man. I'm going to be on a cruise.
Yeah.
On a boat. So,
you got a cruise?
Yeah.
I'm going to be, I got surgery coming up on my back on the 18th. So while you're gone next week, I'll be prepping for that. And then on the 18th, the following week, I think we might get a pod in on Monday. I got the surgery Tuesday. And then we'll figure out when we're back on. But those are the reasons why we're going to be out. And I hope you have a great time on the cruise, man.
Thank you, sir.
Have a ball. Yeah.
Appreciate that. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of folks on that cruise.
Tell everybody where you're going.
A lot of family members. We're going to Caribbean islands. Oh, that's such a Caribbean cruise. I'm just going, dog. I'm just going.
Okay.
I'm just going there. There's some excursions planned, but yeah, it's going to the Caribbean islands. So it's a 5-day cruise. So we fly in there, go to Miami, and then head, then leave from the port of Miami. So yeah.
Okay. There you go, man.
Yeah. So then while you are mint on the mend, I'll be holding it down and maybe bring a guest or two in to try to fill your big shoes. But yeah. So again, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, make sure you go to EZSportsTalk.com, EZSportsTalk.com. Go ahead and like and subscribe to the YouTube channel as well. That's The Easy Sports Talk Show, The Easy Sports Talk Show. Rate as high as you can. However you're listening to this, it does matter. We do appreciate it. And as we always like to say around this time, you can.